tasty food and pretty good company at the Town Clock now, 1 o'clock every Saturday and Sunday with Food Not Bombs. And I believe they're also serving, I think it's Wednesday or Thursday at 4. It used to be Wednesday and Thursday. One of those days they're no longer serving. If you want to help them, if you want to learn more information about it, if you want to contribute vegetables or food or anything of that sort, you can give a call to Food Not Bombs at 425-3345, 425-3345. You can also help the other organization that feeds people directly downtown. They serve 5:30 on Mondays and Tuesdays in front of Double Rainbow down on Pacific Avenue. That's Feed the People, and they're at 425-3333, 425-3333, or 425-FEED. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. So, continuing with the story of the Mental Health's Death Squad in the Anderson Valley Advertiser by Mark Hyman. Foster Freeze is a very popular restaurant with harried mothers, featuring a secure play area for young children with a slide and ball pool, an enclosed outdoor dining cooled by misters set in the ceiling, and food of a much higher quality than Ukiah's prevalent fast food fare. The restaurant was packed with a lunchtime crowd of children and their parents when Ukiah police officer Cedric Crook came in and confronted Marvin Noble at an inside booth. Officer Crook said he wanted to talk with Noble and asked him to step outside. Noble replied he had done nothing wrong and the officer could talk to him right there. Crook then spoke into a radio microphone on his shoulder, and two officers who were waiting outside, Sergeant Trent Taylor and Sean Keezer, who had the police dog Ido straining and growling at the end of a leash, came in and stood next to Crook. Restaurant employee Hope Cavender said Noble then pulled out a knife because he was scared. He was just holding the knife. He wasn't waving it around or anything. What happened next was confirmed by four other restaurant employees. The three officers pulled their guns and started shouting conflicting orders. Everyone on the floor and everyone out. It was pandemonium, total chaos, said one employee who dived behind the counter. Kids were falling down screaming, added another employee, and mothers were running out through the kitchen with their babies. Noble got up from his seat abruptly as a woman customer screamed, "He's got a knife." Ms. Callender said Noble then walked out the front door with the three cops and the police dog right behind him. The Ukiah PD in their press release of July 17th described the incident this way. Initiated a contact with the subject. Almost immediately after this contact was made, the subject brandished a hunting knife, which has a fixed blade and is approximately 8 inches in length, in the presence of the officers. While negotiating with the subject, officers evacuated the restaurant, which was crowded with lunch patrons. The officers continued to attempt to establish a verbal communications with the suspect, but the subject was uncooperative and he exited the restaurant while still brandishing the knife in a threatening manner. The suspect walked northbound from the restaurant along the east side of South State Street, with the officers following on foot. The Foster Freeze employees argue with the Ukiah PD's version of events in their press release and take even greater exception to the police behavior in the crowded restaurant. Many of their customers have complained that the police actions put them and their children at risk. I interrupt the story to note, don't we see the same similarities in concerns at the Button Street neighborhood in the shooting of Brian Andrus, who was shot 4 or 5 times by 4 police officers when he was confronted at his own door by police officers because he was holding a baseball bat. Again, no witness we've spoken to has testified that he was anywhere within range of the police officers. That 4 grown men with pepper spray, clubs, and mace couldn't bring down a man with a baseball bat who was 10 feet away is hard to believe. This seems to be a similar situation. Getting back to the story, and we're reading from the Anderson Valley Advertiser, Boonville, California, of an incident that happened in Ukiah in July. Man's name is Marvin Noble. He was shot dead by police. Reinforcing employee distrust of the police is the investigators who have interviewed many of them 3 or 4 times, pitting minor inconsistencies of one against the other, and calling them liars when their stories don't exactly match in every detail. Each employee saw different parts of what happened from different places in the room, which explains the minor inconsistencies. Yet another worker, Misty Flores, tells of a woman with two children who asked one of the officers outside the restaurant if it was safe to go in. The officer, believed to have been Sergeant Taylor, said no problem and held the door open for the young mother. Moments later, Officers Taylor and Kaser rushed past her in response to Officer Crook's radio call, with police dog Ido growling, barking, and straining at his leash, and all three proceeded to pull their weapons and commence shouting contradictory orders at everyone from Noble to Foster's Freeze patrons. The panic that ensued caused a couple of children to fall or be knocked over in the rush to get out of the restaurant. Outside the Foster Freeze, Marvin Noble first turned east but was blocked by a car coming from the drive-up window. The police started to spray him with pepper spray, and Noble turned back toward State Street and started walking south. The police kept up the chemical attack until Noble stopped in front of the children's play area in front of the restaurant. Noble then reversed his direction, heading north on State Street toward his home near the corner of State and Gobi. Later, Foster Freeze employees would find two empty pepper spray cans, one in the trash outside the front door, and another which was given them by a young boy who found it in the ball pool where it had been tossed. As Marvin Noble walked slowly north on State Street, followed closely by the three police officers and their dog, Ido, literally dozens of people witnessed the unfolding drama. But witnesses' accounts differ substantially from that of the Ukiah PD, who say Noble continued to hold the knife in a threatening manner and was apparently not affected by the chemical agents. Pete Vega and his wife Rosa were driving home south on State Street when they saw Marvin Noble, a man they knew from the neighborhood, being pepper sprayed by the police. Like many motorists that day, they stopped in the middle of the street and watched the action. "We saw that three officers had him down on the ground," recalls Vega, "right outside of the Foster Freeze. Then the police dog grabbed him by the leg. Marvin then pushed the dog away and got up and started walking. His hands were open. He wiped his eyes with his hands. I didn't see a knife. He was wiping his eyes. There was nothing in his hands. All three of the officers were walking behind him, telling him to stop. He just kept walking very slowly. He went into his apartment. They let the dog chase him inside the building. All three officers followed the dog into the apartment. Then I heard the gunshot, and the dog came down by itself. The officer laid it down on the ground, and the ambulance took the dog instead of Marvin." Vega and his wife are the only two witnesses we have found so far who saw Noble on the ground outside of Foster Freeze. An employee at the Union 76 gas station directly across the street from the restaurant said what he saw was outrageous and that someone should investigate the police's conduct. Farther down the street, about halfway between Foster Freeze and Noble's apartment, located on the second floor above the Pet Porium at the corner of State and Gobi, the owner and two employees of a local business had an unobstructed view of Marvin Noble's last walk. The proprietor asked the name of his business and employees not be used for the story because they were afraid of retaliation from the Ukiah Police Department. Many witnesses expressed the same fear, citing past experiences with Ukiah's finest and intimidation by investigators following this incident. Employee number one said the following. "Marvin was walking down the street casually with the three officers behind him. The one closest to us, Kaser, had the dog with a leash in his left hand. Kaser had a shiny object in his right hand that he was kind of waving. I hear them mumbling quietly. It seemed that the police officers were talking between themselves about what they were going to do. They didn't seem to be trying to make Marvin understand what they wanted. If they were yelling, I would have heard them. Marvin was walking in a kind of plodding, methodical manner. I'd seen him walking around town like that. He was walking up the street. The dog was close enough to him it could have nipped at his heels. It appeared the canine officer had 8 to 10 feet of the leash out, making the officers about 10 feet behind Marvin. They turned the corner into the hallway. Officer Kaser made a hand signal. I don't know if it was a hand signal for the dog or if it was a hand and voice command. When Kaser gave the hand command, he let go of the leash. The dog went in by itself, and in a split second, Kaser followed it in, and there was a shot fired. There was a minimum of 2-3 seconds at the most in between when the dog entered the hallway and the shot was fired. I didn't see anything in Marvin's hands when he was walking down the street. I'm 100% certain there was nothing in his left hand. I couldn't see his right hand as well, but from the movements of his body, it didn't look like he had anything in it. There wasn't anything shiny. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I could see the sun reflecting off of something shiny in Officer Kaser's hand. I'm very observant from having had military training. I'm also a bouncer in a bar. I'm always observing and looking for weapons. Kaser had what looked like a gun in his hand. It looked like a gun from the distance I was away. It was an L-shaped object. It appeared to be nickel-coated, and it projected forward as if it was a gun. He didn't have it pointed at Marvin. He was careful to make sure it wasn't pointed at anyone. He was keeping the dog under control. I was impressed by how well the dog seemed to follow his commands. Employee number two has this story. Right across the street, I saw three guys surrounding a big, heavy black man walking northbound on the east side of South State Street. They were about 10 feet away from him. One of them was brandishing a weapon in his right hand. They had shirts and ties on, no uniforms. At first, I didn't know if they were bandits or cops. They were saying something to him. Then two uniformed officers joined them. One of them had a dog on a leash. I only saw one officer with his gun out, not pointing it at anyone. I didn't see anything in the hands of the black man. When the officer said something to him, he nodded. When one of the officers touched his shoulder, he shrugged and looked down and kept on walking. He never stopped walking. On the sidewalk in front of the bank, more police officers joined in. There were some in a patrol car parked across the street. A patrol car was parked next to the bar. The dog was nipping on this guy's leg. The closest the officers got to him was to touch his shoulder. They never attempted to put handcuffs on him. They were walking like they were afraid of this guy. He was just walking away from them like he wanted to go home. There never was anything that I could see in his hands. He was walking with his hands open. The shop owner said he saw three cops and a dog, and two of the officers had their guns drawn. He was adamant that Noble had nothing in his hands when he was walking down the sidewalk. His hands were open, swinging at his side. Sometimes he would wipe his eyes with both hands at the same time. There was nothing in his hands. The shop owner said he had known Noble for about 10 years, and he was always very polite and respectful. Quote, he was a little slow, not actually retarded, just slow. He had put $10 down on an item for sale 10 years ago, and he would come in often and just look. He was a nice guy, and we always kidded him about when he was going to buy it and take it home. When Noble reached the door leading to the stairs up to his apartment, he had to stop and get the key out of his pocket to unlock the security door. Somehow, he was able to do this with from 3 to 5 police officers and a dog surrounding him, all intent on stopping his escape. Noble also managed to shut the door behind him, which automatically locked the cops outside. The police rang the bell for the girlfriend of Sheriff Sergeant Ron Cadillo, who was Nobel's next-door neighbor, and she buzzed them in. Officer Sean Kaser released the police dog Ido, who was first in the door, followed by Kaser, Crook, and Taylor. Witnesses' accounts vary from mere seconds to a minute before they heard the shot. The most often stated elapsed time between the officers entering the door and the single gunshot is 10 to 15 seconds. Ido was also the first out seconds later, followed by his handler, Sean Kaser, who laid the dog on the ground in the open doorway, according to witnesses. A red Ukiah City ambulance arrived almost immediately, and Kaser carried the dog to the ambulance, and the two sped off for the vets. Witnesses estimate 10 minutes elapsed before another ambulance arrived to provide medical attention for Noble, who had been shot once through the chest by Officer Kaser. Downstairs in the petporium, an employee was in the fish room directly above Noble's apartment. Mark said he heard a scuffle and what sounded like a gunshot from directly over his head. Mark was adamant the noise came from overhead, not the stairwell, which shares a wall with the business. Ukiah police report this part of the incident this way. The suspect walked to a doorway which leads to the apartments located above the business at the southeast corner of Gobi and State Streets. Because the officers had previously been in this area while attempting to locate the suspect, they were aware that other residents were at home and could be exposed to danger from the subject brandishing the knife. Because of this increasing risk to the safety of the public, the officers tried to prevent the suspect from entering the common access stairway that leads to these residential apartments. However, the suspect was able to enter the stairway because of a pass key that he possessed and attempted to prevent the officers from following. At this time, a resident in one of the apartments observed the altercation and immediately allowed access for the police officers by using an electronic control device. The officers used the police canine in an attempt to disarm the suspect before he was able to endanger other persons in this area. During the altercation, which occurred inside the stairway, the police dog was stabbed by the suspect and the officers were threatened by the suspect with the knife. The suspect was shot one time by Officer Kaser during this altercation. An ambulance was immediately summoned and the suspect was transported by Ukiah Fire Department ambulance to the Ukiah Valley Medical Center. After the initial encounter at the table at Foster Freeze, all the witnesses we talked to for this report were adamant. Noble had nothing in his hands during the 200-plus yard walk down State Street to his apartment. Employees at Foster Freeze later found a knife sheath under the table where Marvin had been sitting and turned it over to police. Many witnesses were outraged that the police dog was loaded on the first ambulance to arrive at the scene, saying it wasn't right to put a dog's life over a human's. And many witnesses were extremely angry at the bullying and intimidating manner in which police investigators conducted interviews with them, officers implying or saying outright on at least two occasions that the witnesses were lying when they told investigators something they didn't want to hear. Many witnesses were so intimidated they would not talk, while others seemed to have forgotten which country they lived in, so eager were they to go along with Ukiah PD's demand that they talked to no one about what they saw that day. Chief among the latter was Dr. Rupert, the vet, who treated the police dog for what proved to be a superficial wound. Rupert instructed his secretary to say he couldn't talk because of his, quote, patient-client relationship with Ido, the police dog. By all accounts, a non-verbal canine, and that besides, it was an ongoing police investigation. The manager of Wells Fargo Bank also invoked the police investigation dodge when asked if the police had asked for the videotape from the Versateller machine, which overlooks the sidewalk where much of the tragedy transpired. Since the incident, the Ukiah Police Department has called in the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office to perform a, quote, independent investigation. The district attorney's office is also investigating. Neither of these offices have any written policies or procedures for investigating an officer-involved shooting, and there are no administrative standards in place by which to judge their investigation or its independence. Reactions to the announcement that the DA and the sheriff's office would investigate Noble's shooting range from cynical chuckles to open-mouthed astonishment that a truly independent look at the shooting events would not be sought. Relatives of Mr. Noble on the East Coast have called for an investigation by an agency other than law enforcement. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a story called Mental Health's Death Squad by Mark Hyman in the Anderson Valley Advertiser of July 22, 1998, about the police shooting of a man named Marvin Noble, a 45-year-old man with a designation of mentally ill, apparently for stabbing a police dog that was sicked on him. Officer Brandt, take note. That's our own officer downtown who has a police dog on his leash walking up and down with his German Shepherd to intimidate the populace there. This kind of tragedy can happen here as well as in other counties. And I certainly hope that we can get that dog off the mall and out of populated areas to preclude that kind of thing from happening. Anyway, the story, it continues in Anderson Valley Advertisers that follow. There have been two issues since, and I may read you some more of this in a subsequent show. Let's see what I have here. Here's some comments on the issue from the Anderson Valley Advertiser of the next week, July 29th, in a column called Off the Top, a series of short takes on things. Mental health agencies around the state long ago established as policy the dispatch of an experienced mental health worker to corral difficult outpatients. The police are ordinarily dispatched as backup muscle should the soft approach fail. Mendocino County Mental Health simply sends the cops out to do its dirty work. Marvin Noble was not an especially difficult patient. Why his worker or some other professional knew him wasn't available on the work day that turned out to be the last day of Mr. Noble's life is not known. The Ukiah PD confronted Noble at Ukiah's busy Foster Freeze at the tail end of the lunch hour. Noble pulled a knife, although by all accounts did not brandish it in a threatening manner. He was subsequently maced several times before he walked up the street rubbing his eyes to his apartment building at Gobi and South State, where he was shot and killed in the hallway of the building by a 28-year-old Ukiah police officer whose police dog Noble had stabbed when the dog was unleashed on him. The first emergency vehicle to respond to the scene carried the dog off for treatment while Noble lay dead upstairs. An obese black mental patient is shot by a young white cop whose police dog gets emergency treatment priority. I'd say we've got a PC Grand Slam working here, and how dumb can the Ukiah PD be? Wouldn't a hostage situation have been a lot more fun, with State Street blocked off for a few hours, every cop in the county on surrounding rooftops with scoped rifles aimed dramatically at Noble's apartment until the guy agreed to get his shot of Haldol? Jim Moore and Elihu Smith head up the Mendocino County's Con Rep program for the Mental Health Department. Moore is the supervisor, Smith the therapist, social worker. Mental health won't talk about the Noble case. Mental health doesn't talk, period, ever, about anything. The marginally competent are like that, having learned long ago that silence is less likely to get them in trouble. The Con Rep program supervises mental health patients who have committed crimes but are deemed rehabbed to where they can function normally in the community, so long as Moore and Smith are supervising them. There are less than 20 CONRAP patients in Lake and Mendocino counties. The two that we've talked with about the CONRAP program report that Moore and Smith are not liked by the people they supervise because they function more like cops than therapists. Given their record, most people dismiss outpatient complaints as the mutterings of lunatics who ought to be locked up. The mental health department hides their own malfunctioning behind the low status of their clinics, but calls it confidentiality, which the department claims is necessary to protect their patients. Elihu Smith, a Buddhist and Phi Beta Kappa grad of an Ivy League school, recently wrote Noble up for what Smith deemed was Noble's ill-kept commode. Noble mightily resented the complaint because he told other mental health patients it wasn't true. Noble didn't like or trust Smith. He also didn't like the group therapy sessions he was required to attend and didn't like being on the heavy doses of Haldol, which he blamed for his excess weight. Noble also resented what he and others in the program characterize as Con Rep's negativity. As one former client put it, they never say good things in the group. Like a person who has graduated from college or accomplished something else he or she should get some strokes for, they ignore it. But they'll bring up a dirty toilet in group. Embarrassing stuff, never good stuff. We are told that Noble was not physically weak from the meds he was required to take. He apparently was a regular at local gyms where he liked to lift weights. He went for bulk, not looks, a friend says. But Noble was one of the few people in the CONREP program who didn't reoffend. He didn't have encounters with local police, although he did tell one friend that he would, quote, rather die than go back to a mental institution or prison. The same friend describes Noble as, quote, very easygoing, but, quote, the drugs he was on made it hard for him to focus, and that he did resist the program. He didn't like the people at mental health. Mendocino County's mental health department and its welfare department, euphemized these days as the Department of Social Services, are not run or staffed by liberal or even particularly sophisticated persons. Both departments are heavy on sanctions, light on help. Both have thoroughly perverted the community oversight function of their advisory boards, stuffing them with department rubber stamps. Combine closed bureaucracies replete with nepotistic hiring practices in a county whose board of supervisors is indifferent to the functioning of its helping agencies, and the inevitable result is the jailing of crazy people who go crazier in jail, sometimes despairing to the point of suicide, as has happened recently thanks to another ultimate error of judgment by mental health. Police executions of mental patients, a large foster home deficit, cruel welfare policies, and a general approach to the halt and the lame, more like that meted out to the dependent in third world countries. This is again from the Anderson Valley Advertiser, July 29th, 1998.
About the dogs.
Uh-huh. Dog. We have our next talk show host, Reckless, has come in. Hey, Reckless, tell us about it.
Well, actually, I was privy to reading an officer's handbook in which it states in 014 or something like that, which states that an officer is really not supposed to have his dog out in public areas if can be helped. Only in certain situations, and they're only allowed to be out in when there's a bunch of people out, if it's like a riot situation where they need to use the dogs to save another life. But also the fact that public citizens aren't really allowed to have their dog out when there's like big crowds and stuff either, and always have to be on a leash. And I don't know,
Well, Officer Brandt here in Santa Cruz will tell you that it's not a dog. It may look like a dog.
It's a police officer.
Exactly. He just simply is in disguise. He's a very cleverly disguised police officer.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
You know, it's interesting.
But see, this is the thing, is a lot of times animals will have certain, especially trained animals. I mean, he says, okay, well, it's a very well-trained dog, which it is, but animals still have certain instincts, and a lot of times they're trained. Some dogs just get spooked by sometimes mentally ill people because they don't walk right or they walk with a limp. Some animals will kind of instinctually freak out on that, or sometimes even the smell of some people. And whether a dog is trained or not, it still does have those instinctual.
Sure, and it's also, it wasn't the dog. I mean, the dog attacked on the command of the officer in this case. And the situation for increasing tension downtown in Santa Cruz is really high, particularly when officers parade around with these captive, trained canines that cannot be for any other purpose than intimidation. Unless he wants to show off his dog as some sort of maybe a pet show. I don't think that's what Officer Brandt does when he's down on Pacific Avenue. And I want to suggest that people who find this intimidating call the police department, speak of the dog, and tell the police department, call Mayor Celia Scott and tell her you find this an intimidating situation, and file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board saying you don't see the need for this dog downtown. And if enough complaints come in, then it's possible the police department will feel pressured to remove this damn dog from the situation. There's nothing wrong with a dog, but a dog that's trained to attack in a public area being paraded around when there is not a crisis situation, to me, is an invitation to a disaster.
And that's why precisely I thought of you when I was reading in the police conduct handbook, because that's the exact reason that they say that you're not supposed to have your dog around on heavily populated streets and such. Is for the intimidation factor, and that some people are scared of dogs. Officer Brandt says, well, everybody loves the dog and comes up and pets it, but I know a lot of people that have been bitten by dogs that even a gentle dog they're very afraid of at first.
Yeah, and it's clear this is a special kind of arrogant assertion of privilege by an officer who is armed and empowered to do whatever he wants downtown, or let's put it this way, to do more than the average citizen. So that the people cannot make their discomfort known without risking either feared or real retaliation. It's not just, we're not just talking dog here. We're talking a man who was killed by the police in a circumstance where all the witnesses claim that the Anderson Valley Advertiser could find, he didn't even have a weapon. He earlier had a weapon, but at this point, according to them, he didn't have a weapon. He wasn't brandishing this weapon. And the result of all this has been a clampdown and a cover-up and an in-house investigation. And, of course, this is all very, very, very familiar. This is what we have had in Santa Cruz around Happy John Dine, Brian Andrus. This is what's happening in Seaside and Monterey County around the shooting of Charles Vaughn. This is what we have to be alert to make sure doesn't happen in the future. And it's hard to say what can change this. Except of course for the critical mass of popular protest that can really turn this around. People who stand up and speak out against it, preferably in groups supporting each other, are the way to end this kind of misconduct. As I said, call the Citizens Police Review Board, even though it's a sack of shit, and I say that without any apology, at 429-3262 to file a complaint. If you don't like seeing this police dog downtown, file a complaint against Officer Brandt asking what was the specific need on that particular time of day to have a police dog walking down around town on a leash in a populated area. What was the need to have that dog there? And of course, if you're concerned about the shootings of Happy John Dine and Brian Andrus, you can ask the police, the Citizens Police Review Board, to reopen the case. They will ignore you, yes, but your request will be on record. And if enough requests get ignored, the bureaucrats start getting nervous. I got 4 minutes left here before I've got to yield the mic to Reckless. I want to thank you for being with me today. And there's a number of items in the paper that I would kind of bring to your attention and may in the future read, although I never really have time to catch up with this stuff. If you're interested in this, the killing of Marvin Noble, it's in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which I don't think is in the public library. I haven't been able to find it. It's no longer sold in Bookshop Santa Cruz or the Java House where it used to be sold, two stores from which I'm barred anyway, but which most people are not. It is sold at the Book Loft, again, a good little bookshop at Soquel and Seabright. What else have we got before we go? Well, there's a new gang gathering ban in Stockton I was going to talk about. It's illegal now if you want to walk down the street with another alleged gang member. And you may remember about 3 or 4 months ago, we aired a tape from Watsonville where ACLU attorney John Crew talked about the danger of you suddenly being accused of being a gang member or gang associate simply because of who you happen to be with. And if they can now order you and make it a crime for you to be in the company of someone else, not doing anything wrong, but in the company of someone else, this is a serious, significant restriction on basic rights that I think we should not allow. There's, of course, prison cover-up happening up at Corcoran Prison, Corcoran State Prison. It's been in the news. I first learned about this from Miguel Balderos, who was in different prisons. I don't think it was a Corcoran. I think it was another one of the state prisons where he was forced to fight by guards under threat of being killed for their amusement. This is an incredible thing. Now, I've got a lot of bad things to say about Balderos, and I have said them on the air. I think he's a thief, and I think he's had numerous problems that he has not resolved with activists in the community. But he is also a man who speaks truly, I found at other times, and this account is incredible. So that's something I would have talked about, and hopefully we'll talk about in the future. Of course, the beach flats, we were not able to get into. We did a good interview with Phil Bear, which I apologize. We were not able to play, but hopefully we'll be able to on Thursday when I return. That's at 6 o'clock in the evening for the next edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And we have, we're going to be going out, I guess, on the music of Jim Page, chosen by our next talk show host, the ever restless Reckless. Thank you for being with me, and tune in again.
Seven seas, relative humanities. Everywhere I look, I see someone looking back at me. Nation states and borderlines, divided states of mind. Politics comes to blows, and everybody wants to know, whose world is this? Whose world is this? Whose world is this? First world riding high, second world standing by, third world under fire, funny how we all conspire. We don't know 'cause we can't see how such a way could come to be. Riding on a spinning wheel, soon enough will be revealed. Whose world is this? Whose world is this? Whose world is this? What kind of world will our children receive? After all is said and done, what kind of creed have we come to believe that they may never receive one? We come to believe. forever to receive one. Four winds, seven seas, relative humanities. Everywhere I look, I see someone looking back at me.
song that you might get along with. All about a natural seed growing wild by the side of the roadway. It's nature's a wonderful weed. Been around so long it's hard to tell why anyone think it's new. Love it or hate it, however you relate it, I'll leave that up to you. But isn't that righteous? And isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. History's locked in a cardboard box and it's hard to take a look. With sidetracked frills and fantasies all written all over the book. Everybody tells you what to think and they've got their reasons why. You gotta pick reality up by the scruff of the neck and look it right in the eye. And isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? And isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. Now the same people that are spreading the fear, the same people that scare me the most. You know, some of them look like they just as soon like they're hanging from a lamppost. They talk about what it does to your brain. Well, I just have to react. Cause Hitler never touched the stuff and that's an actual fact. And isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. George Washington was the father of our country, and he had a hemp plantation. Betsy Ross used it to make the flag that flew above the baby nation. They wrote their declarations on paper from that same hemp fiber press. And I don't know what they spoke when they were taking a break, but I got a pretty good guess. And isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. Just might help them relax. Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? And isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. So I'll be on my way now. I guess I've taken just about enough of your time. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like my state of mind. But I got mine and you got yours. We give what we can take. So next time I need a breather, well, I might just take a little smoke break. Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? Isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me. Isn't that righteous? And isn't that good enough? Ain't that the way it ought to be? Isn't that righteous? And isn't that good enough? Righteous is good enough for me.
Yes, freaks, you are tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. This is Reckless, and you are listening to Fucking It Up in a Fuck Society with music and issues for brainwashed children. That was Jim Page right there with Righteous. Before that was Take Our Culture Back.
And before that was Whose World Is This? That's the first three tracks off of his Whose World Is This album, put out by Liquid Cry. Oh, issues, issues, issues. Yes, indeed, folks. Food Not Bombs is serving right now. If you'd like to go to Food Not Bombs and get some free vegetarian meal, you can go down to the clock tower right now. They're serving. Hopefully, I believe they're spring. I wish I could go down there because I'm fucking kind of hungry and big old soup tastes really good right now. 425-3345 if you'd like to donate any food, money, space where they can keep their stuff. 425-3345 if you'd like to volunteer, help them out. Chop some food for somebody else for a change instead of going to McDonald's or fucking Burger King or Taco Hell or any of that crap. So when we're at the I don't know, there's been some racist things going on. I've been hearing some homophobic, racist, sexist, both male and female sexism, racism, and just like what is it, fuck commies, fuck faggots, all this fucking hateful, let me mind you, hateful, very serious talk on the radio from different shows. And basically I just wanted to ask the audience, I know, you know, maybe there's only four of you out there, okay, and we don't have a phone in here, but I would